From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Thousands of protesters took to the streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota on Wednesday night for a second night to protest Tuesday's police killing of George Floyd, who was pinned to the ground by a police officer kneeling on his neck for nearly 9 minutes until he stopped breathing. A witness videotaped the incident and it quickly went viral. After nationwide outrage, the officers were fired, but many in Minnesota are demanding that the police officers be tried for murder. That call was joined by Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey late Wednesday. Radio Sputnik hosts Brian Becker and John Kiriakou spoke with Michelle Gross, president of Communities Against Police Brutality, and Noah McCourt, executive director of the Minnesota Disability Justice Network, which focuses on criminal justice and police brutality against people with disabilities. They were joined by Sputnik News analysts Nicole Roussel and Walter Smolarek. The segment opens with Brian Becker.
John, thousands of people in Minneapolis were in the streets last night, as they should be. This time, it's so brazen. We've been talking about it. This cop takes this man, puts him down on the ground, puts a knee on his neck. He says over and over again, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Hey, man, I can't breathe." His body finally goes limp. He's unconscious. The cop stays with his heavy knee on his neck and he's dead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I couldn't actually watch the video. I started to, but I couldn't watch it. I did look at the still photo. The cop has his hand in his pocket. He's relaxed while he's got the knee on his neck. He's relaxed. So he's not fearing anything. He's relaxed. And then, you know, I see all these memes counterposing Colin Kaepernick taking a knee and everybody right. in the government so outraged that a professional athlete would take a knee to protest police murder of black people. And then you see the knee of this white cop killing this man, intentionally killing this man. And of course, people were in the streets.
Yes. Let's put this into perspective too, Brian. George Floyd was suspected of being in his car writing a bad check. Suspected. Somebody from a store called and said, "I think that there's a guy in this car writing a bad check." Okay. Last I heard, that's not a death penalty offense. Then when the police arrive, they pull him out of the car, they wrestle him to the ground, they cuff him, which is important here. And it's after they cuff him that one of the police officers kneels on his neck with the full weight of his body. Now, you're right. That cop had his hands in his pockets. He was relaxed. George Floyd was not a threat to him. And George Floyd, if you watch the video, which is absolutely traumatic, he is begging this cop to get up because he can't breathe. Now, there are three other cops there as well who are working to keep the crowd at bay. There are people shouting at the cops, "He can't breathe. Get off of his neck. You're killing him." And the cop just knelt there. And he knelt there for more than 5 minutes. The most horrible part of this video is that George Floyd finally goes silent. And then when he goes silent, he goes limp. And it's clear that they've killed him. And that's what the bottom line here is, Brian. These police officers, while it's great that they were fired yesterday by the city of Minneapolis, these police officers committed murder. This was cold-blooded murder. And they have to be prosecuted for it.
Yeah, Nicole, if somebody had put a cop down on the street and put their knee on the cop and the cop said, "Please, man, please, I can't breathe." And the guy just, or the person killed the cop, the person wouldn't be losing their job. They'd be in jail. There'd be no bail. They'd be facing the death sentence or maximum life sentence. There wouldn't be any question about it. They would spend the rest of their life in jail. So here you have a situation where, you know, people have been chanting and organizations have formed around the slogan that Black Lives Matter or other social demands similar. And the cops and the right wing and the racists have formed these organizations called Blue Lives Matter. But the fact of the matter is the blue lives are given absolute immunity and impunity to kill black people in America and to kill other people too, but disproportionately killing young black and Latino people. again, they're fired, as John pointed out. But these people should, these cops should spend the rest of their lives in prison.
Yes, they absolutely should. And the reason, the only reason they were fired is because so many people all over the country were so outraged, so rightfully outraged about this. This is not the first time that the Minneapolis police have behaved in an outrageous way by shooting someone in cold blood or crushing someone into the pavement until they suffocated and died. And so, you know, Minneapolis Police Department had to react because people were are so ready to be so mad about this, to be so, you know, without words, angry, frustrated, overwhelmed by this. And you can hear that if you can stomach listening to the video, watching the video, what you were saying about if this was someone, a non-cop who had a, who had the cop on the ground with their knee in the cop's neck, they wouldn't just be serving, you know, given a life sentence today. You know, the clearly they would probably also have been shot, right? They wouldn't have even been able to get away. And you can feel that power, that that power that the cops have over people, despite the clear fact that the bystanders are watching a man be suffocated on the ground, be have his lungs crushed, have his nose is bleeding, he's being pushed into the ground so hard. And the bystanders, the people who are this crowd that's developed, who are saying, who are loudly protesting, you can hear the nerves, the compulsion in their voice. They want to go and they want to prevent it, but there are several other cops in their way. And the bystanders know if they try to go in and they try to save him, they're not sure what's going on. They don't know what's going on. It's hard to imagine that they would be actually killing him, right? We're all standing here saying, don't kill him, don't kill him. And they know they're going to be injured. They're going to be hurt if they go in.
They're going to be shot. The police will shoot them. The crowd does the instinctive thing. When you see somebody being murdered in front of your eyes in a cold-blooded way, you try to stop the murder. And the only reason you wouldn't is if you feel the murderer has the advantage and that the murderer is about to kill you. And people in the United States, and especially the people in the Black community in the United States, know the police have an absolute license to kill them. They have the license to be judge, jury, and executioner. I mean, this has been the reality since 1619, Walter. I mean, the United States no longer has legal slavery. It no longer has Jim Crow. It no longer has legal apartheid. But it's the same racist police state where the forces of state power can kill Black people with impunity. And they've been doing it either legally or extra legally, you know, for more than four centuries. I mean, this is America. Yeah, America is very exceptional. For 400 years, it's tolerated this kind of behavior. And again, if the government and the powers that be wanted it to come to an end, they would, because they could take cops like these who cavalierly, casually murder a man in cold blood in daylight, they could make an example out of them. But they won't make an example, or they certainly don't want to, because in fact, they're perfectly fine with a reign of terror going on against big parts of the American population who are poor, and the government considers this to be a necessary element of social control.
Yeah, that's right. There is legal impunity for cops or for racist vigilantes, too, who murder Black people. And I think, you know, that fact makes the thousands of people who went into the streets pretty much immediately after this murder to protest all the more courageous. I thought it was just incredible that such enormous numbers of people took to the streets in Minneapolis in the face of very brutal police repression, tear gas, pepper spray, beatings, arrests, to demand that justice be served in this case. And these police officers who clearly were captured on video murdering George Floyd be charged with just that crime. And, you know, this comes right after, you know, similar police murders of Black people, of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, Breonna Taylor in Louisville, in Indiana, Dejon Reed. So, you know, people are outraged. And I mean, this keeps happening over and over again. I mean, since, like you said, since, you know, 1619, for 400 years, certainly, you know, these types of legal lynchings have been a primary tool of terror, of social control through the means of terror since the end of slavery, since the end of Reconstruction. So, yeah, this is a long battle and people are continuing to fight.
You know, John, I want to encourage our audience to tune in on Thursdays, because you conduct an interview every Thursday with Paul Wright and Kevin Gostala about America's criminal injustice system. And some of the people who are against our show and against Sputnik, the so-called the cottage industry that monitors Sputnik and says that when we do shows like this, when we talk about this, that we're sowing confusion, we're undermining confidence in America's democracy. Remember that, I think it was the Center for Strategic and International Studies, some little newly financed wing, this new cottage industry, was talking about that segment of Loud and Clear and saying, well, some of the things they say are true, meaning some of the things that we talk about in that segment are true, but it's all, you know, it's the Russians taking advantage of the fact that there are these problems with the criminal injustice system and highlighting them so as to undermine and sow confusion. I want to invite CBS, ABC, CNN, MSNBC to cover that segment of Loud and Clear, Criminal That's Injustice, right. hosted by you, John, for the most part, along with Paul Wright and Kevin Gastella, because let's have the mainstream media, not a Sputnik, but let's have the American mainstream media actually highlight the truth about America's police state.
They never talk about America's police state. Brian, every police incident, like the murder of George Floyd, is treated as a one-off, not treated as a pattern. A pattern that shows the breakdown of our system. They say, oh, you know, there was a problem in Minneapolis, or there was a problem in Cleveland or in Baltimore or all over America. But they never point to the fact that the entire system is rotten and it's broken. And I'm proud to say that we do talk about these issues. There's no other show, to the best of my recollection, the best of my understanding, talks about these criminal defense issues. And we have experts. We have Kevin Gastella, who covers criminal defense for shadowproof.com. And we have Paul Wright, who's the executive director of the Human Rights Defense Center. He's also the editor of both Prison Legal News Magazine and Criminal Legal News Magazine. These are people who know what they're talking about. And we will continue talking about these issues so long as the police continue to murder innocent citizens in the street and get away with it.
Nicole, again, I want to go back. And again, I was sort of ranting about the way the media doesn't cover this. You know, when they have to, they cover it for a little bit. But they cover it like this. Listen to the New York Times front page headline for what happened in Minneapolis. Videos and police reports differ in string of deadly encounters. That sounds like there's a difference of the reporting. Well, here's the first paragraph. The Minnesota police statement was short and sanitized. It was a lie. It's not sanitized. An allegation of forgery, a suspect, quote, who appeared to be under the influence, close quote, who, quote, physically resisted officers, close quote, and who appeared to be, quote, suffering medical distress. Okay, that's the police report. They said he was under the influence. He seemed to be suffering medical distress. Yes, that would be after they put their knee on his throat or at the back of his neck for 5 minutes and killed him. And the headline is so passive, videos and police reports differ in string of deadly encounters. These are not a string of deadly encounters. These are police murders, first of all. Let's call them by their not right name, not deadly encounters. That's BS. I mean, that kind of coverage is just this sanitized reporting by the New York Times to cover a story. It's catch and minimize. It's their own version of catch and kill. Catch and minimize with these ridiculous headlines. And videos and police reports differ. No, the video tells the truth and the police are lying. That's not simply a difference in a string of deadly encounters. Lies about consistent pattern of police murders of Black people.
And, you know, the most ridiculous part is that these lies have been uncovered in case after case after case. When police press releases come out after murders like this that happen with impunity all over the country, police always say, well, he charged at me, or he had a gun, or he was mentally unstable, et cetera, et cetera. There are always excuses that are made, and they are always debunked because they are not true. When we have the video, we're able to see what happened. But let's even say the press release, even if this press release does all those facts you just listed out that are lies, let's say those facts are real. Let's say those statements are real. Let's say that's actually true. Well, being in medical distress does not deliver the death penalty, and you're certainly in medical distress once you've been slammed onto the pavement and handcuffed and had your face and lungs pressed into the ground until you can't breathe. He resisted arrest. Okay, well, under any other system, you would charge him with resisting arrest And you would, since you clearly had him under control, we can see that in the video, he's handcuffed, he's on the ground, then you can, I don't know, not kill him. You know, the other piece of this is forgery in process. I mean, if you look at states all over the country, there are somehow, for some reason, because we have this massive mass incarceration problem, there are people actually serving time in jails and in prisons for having forged bad checks. I mean, what kind of a system puts people in prison when they are trying to get the things that they need in life, especially during a pandemic, are forging a bad check and are then put in prison? I mean, all of the people who have applied for unemployment insurance and haven't gotten those checks from the government for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, the government isn't being charged with forgery in process and certainly isn't being suffocated to death on the pavement. The one last thing I'll say that I really encourage people to go on Twitter and look at the protest videos from last night, because, you know, from as high up as a helicopter, there is footage showing probably a mile long of protesters demanding justice for George Floyd. People in Minnesota are not taking this lightly. There's about 30 seconds of footage, again, panning from so far above in a helicopter. I mean, there are so many people who went out last night. They were as safe as they could be far apart, but the police absolutely attacked them, you know, showing that they are completely still acting violently and with impunity.
Yeah, the police came out swinging last night in Minneapolis. The only reason the words medical distress come in to the police report is that they killed somebody who wasn't in medical distress and then said, oh, we encountered somebody who was in medical distress. And that's why he died later, because he wasn't in medical distress. The medical distress phrase only comes in as part of the obvious police cover up of this murder. Walter, Nicole is making this point. And by the way, there's no evidence whatsoever that George Floyd forged any check. I mean, I've never even heard of a forgery in process. I mean, don't you have to forge something in order for it to be a forgery? If you're in process, that means you haven't completed it. But whatever. There's no evidence that that was the case. But if you want to talk about thievery, you have all of these corporations in America, the biggest banks, they are stealing tens of billions of dollars. They're taking money. They're representing themselves as the little guy. They're being bailed out by the government. The government's using our tax dollars for these thieves on Wall Street to basically loot the national treasury. And they are being rescued and saved. Meanwhile, if you took all the people in prison who are in prison because they stole, because they forged a check or because they stole some money, you name it. The cash amount that has been stolen by all of the people in America's prison, and America has one out of every four prisoners in the world, won't nearly equal what's being stolen constantly in Wall Street. I'm saying this without hyperbole. And you look at the biggest banks. Take, for instance, Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo purchased Wachovia Bank after the 2008 financial crisis. Wachovia had been found guilty, actually it pled guilty, to having laundered $360 billion in drug money. Okay, just get that number. Wachovia laundered $360 billion in drug money and pled guilty to it. Not one Wachovia executive went to jail. Wells Fargo bought up the bank, incorporated Wachovia into Wells Fargo, and as part of the deal with the government, Wells Fargo agreed to pay a $161 million fine for Wachovia's $360 billion in laundered drug money, which shows the complete class character of the criminal justice system. The bankers are too big to fail. They're too big to jail. The government doesn't want to jail them. And the same goes with the police. This is an ordered criminal justice system, and we should just use the segment that John does every Thursday, criminal injustice, as the appropriate way to describe the existing criminal justice system. It's not criminal justice, it's criminal injustice.
Right. Well, this gets at the big question that I think so many people are asking themselves right now. I mean, what is the role of the cops? Why are there cops in this society? The police say that they're goal is to quote unquote protect and serve, right? But that can't possibly be true when we see these videos and instances happening time after time after time of the police just wantonly murdering Black people and Latino people and really anybody who's poor. You know, clearly the job of the cops is not to, quote unquote, enforce public safety. But they do have a very important function under a system as unjust as this one. I mean, to give another example, you know, there are hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people who are about to receive eviction notices because of the criminal inaction of this government during the coronavirus crisis. Who's going to actually physically kick people out of their homes? Well, I mean, it's cops, it's sheriffs. You know, their job is to make sure that the landlord's right to make a profit takes precedence, takes priority, legally speaking, physically speaking, over the right of people to have a home. Now, in a just society, I think that kicking somebody out onto the streets in the middle of a pandemic, risking public health, imperiling public health, that would actually be a criminal offense, right? I mean, that's something that's actually dangerous to society, not paying your rent. And yet what the police are doing is imperiling public safety or what they're preparing to do is to imperil public safety on behalf of the landlord's right to make a profit. And so in addition to that, we see their role, we've been talking about their role, controlling society, spreading racist terror, you know, acting as a true terroristic organization. So yeah, I mean, that's why there are cops. I mean, you are what you do, and that's what the cops do.
Journalists Abiyomi Ezekwe and Richard Silverstein spoke with Press TV about the case in Minneapolis.
Well, this follows a pattern that has been going on for many years inside the United States. Many of the people who are recruited to public safety and law enforcement in the country are people who have an extreme hatred towards African Americans, towards people of Latin American descent, indigenous people. So this is a continuation of this same pattern of hatred and outright systematic violence against African-American people. And this is totally uncalled for, but we've seen an escalation in these type of attacks over the last several months, the ones that have been uncovered and exposed. What we saw in Brunswick, Georgia, what we saw in Louisville, outside of Louisville, Kentucky, with the killing of a woman there. What happened earlier this week in Central Park in New York City, which fortunately did not end in a police intervention and a police killing. So yes, this is part and parcel of the ongoing attacks on African Americans in the United States.
I was doing some computations about the number of police killings in the United States by race, and the number of white people killed compared to Black is such that if you were Black, you were five times more likely to be killed by police in the United States than if you're white. And it's clear that Minneapolis has a profound problem with this, because this isn't the first incident where a policeman has killed a Black person in Minneapolis, and it's happened, as your other guest said, in many other places. So the police should be trained about how to restrain a suspect without killing them. And the fact that they're using a knee on somebody's windpipe and causing the blood to stop to their brain and then giving them a heart attack or whatever stroke happened here, it indicates a total lack of training on the part of the police, and B, it does indicate that the police are prejudiced against African Americans and are much more likely to use violence against them. And it's a profound sign of racism in American society that this continues. At least we have videos now that bystanders are taking, and those are getting on the air, and that's helping at least to shine a light on this terrible injustice that it's happening. And that never happened in the past. So in that sense, maybe things are a little bit improved over the past, but the deaths and the murders still continue. The one other thing I want to add is that I'm hopeful about is that with the FBI investigating this, the Department of Justice could, if it wanted to, file charges against these policemen. I'm hoping that murder charges will be filed. I'm hoping to see the one policeman who murdered this man end up in prison for murder. And I don't think that he'll have a very happy time of it in prison, because suspects don't like to see policemen who've been harassing them their whole lives when they get to prison. So he might not have a very good time of it there.
However, Silverstein said there is a glimmer of hope in that things may be changing, albeit very slowly.
I think in the past there was total impunity, and that no policeman would be held accountable for these sorts of crimes at all. And that slowly over the past 5 or so years changed. And now you are seeing a handful of incidents where policemen are being convicted and found guilty of murder and are being sent to prison. I would believe that this is such an egregious case with the video being, exposing the crime here flagrantly, that these cops will end up in prison. It will depend on the Trump Justice Department, which I have no faith in, but it will be hard not for the Justice Department not to prosecute these officers, and I believe that it will happen. And I am hopeful for change over the longer term.
To mask or not to mask? That is the question in a pandemic, apparently. RT's Caleb Maupin has more.
As if Americans weren't already divided enough, we now have a new trend called mask shaming. The Centers for Disease Control recommends that Americans wear a mask in order to avoid getting infected amid the pandemic. However, some people have decided that if you do that, you're a big sissy. We've also got store owners who refuse to allow their customers to wear a mask. The governor of North Dakota seemed like he was on the verge of tears as he urged state residents to have empathy for those who have to wear a mask because of high risks.
If somebody wants to wear a mask, there should be no mask shaming. You should look at them and say, that person's wearing a mask because for them, there's additional risk in their life.
Apparently to some people, wearing a mask is a political statement. However, in other parts of the country, you can be chased out of a grocery store for not wearing a mask. Polls show that the decision of whether or not to wear a mask is linked to one's political ideology. This is in the context of Republicans and Trump supporters who desperately want the economy to open up once again, despite health warnings to the contrary. Blue states with Democratic administrators are opening up more slowly than red states governed by Republicans, and Democrats are more likely to wear a mask than Republicans are. And it's playing out in the media. At this point, we've got divisions between the networks. Take a look at liberal MSNBC.
You can see here, just around. Nobody's wearing them. Nobody's,
including the cameraman.
There you go, including the cameraman. Yeah. Katie.
Captain Cruz not wearing.
Striking images. Cal Perry. Cal, thank you very much.
The conservative Fox Network has a different approach.
Call people out for not wearing a mask when one of their own team is not wearing one either.
We need to ask our friends in the press to be responsible.
Now, Bloomberg News and Fox News had quite different interpretations of events and statements by President Donald Trump and his Democratic contenders and their decisions about whether or not to wear a mask in public.
This is not about politics. This is not about whether you're liberal or conservative, left or right, Republican, Democrat. We wear the mask, and it's been very clear what the studies have shown. You wear the mask not to protect yourself so much as to protect others.
In the middle of a crisis in which 100,000 Americans have already died, you would think that the country would pretty much be on the same page. But the American elites have gotten so good at blaming each other, and the public has become so divided, that it seems amid a public health crisis, the finger-pointing, casting of suspicion, and polarization cannot be turned off. Caleb Maupin, RT, New York.
We'd like to thank you for listening to the CPR News on this station and ask that you support this public radio station so that we can stay here and speak to you about these things that are not being discussed in the corporate media. This station relies on your generosity, and we hope that you will be generous the next time they come knocking and looking for your help.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.